Hey, welcome, dear podcast listeners. It's been a while.
It's been a really long time.
Especially, it's been a long while since we've been in the same room. It's been like a month.
A month, yeah.
And that is too long.
I had crazy school, and then I was out of town in D.C. again for 2 weeks for the holidays, as you could probably tell from the Twitter account that was basically neglected.
And then, it's okay, it happens.
Yeah. And I got sick when I was out there, so excuse my hacking up a lung probably for the next little bit.
It's okay, I probably will too, because I got sick this weekend.
Oh, really?
As well. Yeah. My parents have been visiting, and he gave me something when he was out here.
I'll do everyone.
Thanks,
everyone,
Dad.
In Virginia where I was at. Like, nasty head cold for weeks on end. Flu. All my family in California got, like, nasty flu. I mean, diarrhea, throwing up.
So I'm glad I didn't go to California. Nasty.
But, yeah, holidays were amazing. I had a great, amazing time in D.C.
Yeah,
totally loved it.
I stayed here in Iowa. It was super chill, and it was super fun. Just me and Cassie, just chilling out.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Loki. And then I had six. This is ruthless for my school, but when I came back, I had 5 exams, a couple quizzes, and like a practical.
It's like unforgivable.
It is. And then I had two, a practical and a test on Monday.
That's unforgivable.
Which we're recording this Sunday, so it's tomorrow. So yeah, it was awful. So anyway.
Your school hates students.
They do. They do. So now we're finally back together, and this is exciting because we have a great episode, I think.
We have our best of 2012. We're going to talk about the best single issue, the best book, the best artist, the best writer, the biggest surprise. We're going to talk about our favorite and least favorite things about comics in the year 2012. This was the year that Darren and I both really took the plunge and started getting back into comics, or into comics for the first time.
Yeah, for me.
And collecting them on a weekly basis and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it was a lot of fun to go through my boxes and think about what was great that happened this year, what was mediocre that happened this year, what was I really excited about, all that kind of stuff. And we've kept our list secret from one another.
Which I'm excited about because it's so nice to not know what Brayden's going to say, because I will honestly, sometimes I'm guessing, be shocked and awed, just like some of you will be. So our reactions are totally legit, not faked.
Yeah,
not
we'll
that
see.
I usually fake them, but
we'll see what happens. Some of them are pretty obvious if you've ever listened to this podcast before.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It happens.
Actually, I think I have someone that will surprise you.
I have a couple that might surprise as well. My best writer specifically was a surprise when I wrote it down.
Mine was too, actually.
Also, my worst moment in comics.
Oh, really? So I don't think mine will be a surprise.
It'll be a surprise. We'll see. But let's get started. So, let's start. Our first category is best single issue. Okay, let's talk. Best single issue for
mine,
you.
This is one that's not a surprise, and I really debated between this issue.
Hey, if it's the truth, you've got to you've got to let the truth come out in your heart.
So the one that is Batman issue 5, when
he's in the labyrinth.
When he's in the labyrinth.
Ooh,
this
yeah.
is one because, once again, this is my first time in comics, and I've heard...
Barely that, skating in, because that was like the January.
Well, that was my... Because what I did is I got in and... I got in January.
And that was it. That was the issue that came out in January.
Yeah, so that was like my first new issue of Batman. It was issue number 5. No, it was issue 4. So it was December.
But still,
second one.
It's
so when you're reading it and all of a sudden you're flipping through the pages and the pages sideways and you think, "Oh, that's lame. Like why the really a print issue in Batman?" And then you look and you see like, "Whoa, wait a second. The ads are upright." This is intentional.
Yep.
And you're reading it and you're twisting it and you're going into the craziness that Batman is experiencing, because he is not going crazy.
He's losing his
crazy.
Mind. Yeah.
If you read that issue again, he is crazy in that issue.
Yeah.
He's lost it. And you're sensing that. And to me it was just totally mind blowing.
Yeah.
No pun intended, but really just blew me away. And that was when I realized I am so glad I got into comic books.
Yeah.
Because this is more than just punching and hitting. This is actual intelligence right here. And just the artistic creativity with what they did. And making you as the reader emotionally so much more involved by something as simple
It's making you turn the book.
Turn the book.
Yep.
And the honorable mention I was debating was Batman issue 13 with the Joker, you know, taking down Gotham Central and breaking everyone's neck. But the thing is, it's Joker. I mean, it's not abnormal. It's a great horror story.
Plus, we'll see. We got to see the payoff.
Yeah, we got to see the payoff.
It's very simple. It's very possible that the payoff will be in Darren's best of 2013 list.
Yeah, but man, oh man, just that issue number 5. My favorite.
It was a classy
experience.
One.
In comic book reading so far.
Yeah. I still remember the first time I ever read a comic that did that. It was The Sandman. And as I was gyrating my because, you know, I didn't read that in the trades because I was 10 and it was not for 10-year-olds.
No.
But I was spinning my trade paperback around as I read it, and I was just like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And so when I read issue 5 and I just started spinning and I was like, oh, Capullo, Snyder, you guys rock.
Yeah, it was great.
It was beautiful.
So what's yours?
Mine is Hawkeye number 6.
Oh, number 6. I don't know number 6.
Number 6 is better than number 3.
Really?
Number 6 is the single best issue of any comic I have read all year.
Number 6?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, how so? Because number 3 was incredible.
Number 3 was the one where he bought the car from Cherry.
Yeah.
And
they had the logo over
the
his crotch
he's jumping naked. All that kind of stuff.
And to make a car scene interesting in comic book form, that is hard to do.
Yeah, there have been 2 I felt that ever about. It was Stumptown issue 4, which was last month.
Yeah.
And Hawkeye issue 3.
Right.
Yep.
Yep.
But here's why. Hawkeye 6 is about 6 days in the life of Clint Barton. And it's totally disjointed. It's not told in sequential, chronological order. It's totally broken up.
So it's like The Prestige.
Kind of. But it's got this disjointed timeline, and it really shows us who Hawkeye is, more than even any of the other ones have. There's a point where the very first day, they get in a fight against some Hydra agents, or AIM agents, and Hawkeye gets knocked out, and then he comes to, and Wolverine and Spider-Man have already mopped up the bad guys, and they're like, he's like, I think I need to take a break. And they're like, you should! Go watch Dog Cops! And he's got it on his DVR, but he hasn't had a chance to watch Dog Cops yet. And so they're like, dude, it's so great! And he's like, don't tell me no spoilers! And so the whole issue basically is about him wanting to watch the show Dog Cops.
Really?
And so
that's the best issue? Really?
There's a day when Tony Stark comes over to try to help him hook up the AV system in his apartment because the guy and there was supposed to be this other, like, this mystical person whose name I can't remember, and that's who Matt Fraction wanted to use, and then he got told by a Marvel editorial, oh, he's dead, and they were like, dang it. And so that gets written into the comic.
Really?
And Hawkeye's like, I wanted him to come, but he's dead. And things like that. And then, you know, it deals with those Russian gangsters again. They kidnap Hawkeye and beat the crap out of him. But then there's this one page. There's this one page that is, because they're like, you need to leave or we're going to kill you. And so the next day, there's just a scene of him standing in front of that building in his jeans and a t-shirt with his quiver hanging off of his belt loop. And his bow drawn, standing in front of the building in the snow. That is the single most beautiful piece of art in any comic book I've read in all of 2012.
Really?
It is the most stunning page of art. And it makes you realize that Hawkeye, it's like I posted on my Facebook, Hawkeye is not the superhero that you care about, but he's the superhero that you should care about.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he's the superhero. It doesn't matter that he's a superhero. All that matters is that he's a superhero.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He doesn't matter in this big Marvel universe because he shoots arrows. But he's such a good person. Like, he invites these other people in the apartment to come over and watch Christmas specials in his house because their TV's not working because he accidentally shot an arrow into their satellite dish. And so they come to his house to watch Christmas specials. It's just beautiful. And it's Aja and Hollingsworth doing the art. It's Fraction writing, and it was the best comic
of
the year.
Can I borrow this issue?
Yes, you may.
Oh.
Yes, you may.
Wow. Because I want to get issue 7, because issue 7, Matt Fraction has said all of his...
All the proceeds go to the Red Cross to help with Sandy relief.
Because this actually takes place in New York City during Hurricane Sandy.
It's going to be good.
So
I've seen the preview images.
One.
It's going to be really good. Yeah, the Hawkeye 6, man. So good.
Wow. So,
it was like perfection in sequential storytelling.
Matt Fraction does awesome on these
on the smaller properties.
Yeah.
on the smaller stuff.
Really, really does.
Because, yeah, it's like all the frenetic energy and excitement of Casanova, which is his, it's on Icon, actually.
It's on Icon?
But still, it's creator-owned property.
Yeah.
But it's still a superhero book. It's still Hawkeye. He's an Avenger. He's an Avenger.
Maybe here, Loki.
And who would have ever thought that we would have cared so much about Hawkeye? I never thought I would have.
For me, it started in Avenging Spider-Man. Was
issue 4. Yep.
That's why he has
really
to be perfect
great.
All the time.
Yep. It was
but that's
good.
The thing is, he was even still written as he's like the Guy Gardner of Marvel, if that makes sense.
But he's not anymore.
But he's not in the Hawkeye.
In the Hawkeye ongoing, he's not.
And he's just very likable, very lovable.
And him and Kate Bishop. She's awesome.
She is.
Young Avengers. Next week or the week after. Young Avengers.
She's
Kate
Anna.
Bishop. Yeah. It's Kid Loki, Miss America, young...
How old is Kate Bishop? Is she a teenager?
She's like 18, 19.
Oh, that makes sense.
She's a young Avenger. Anyway, so let's talk best series of the big two. Tell me, what's your best series of the big two?
Now, this is going to be a surprise for you, because I know that you're probably, and probably the readers or listeners, you're probably expecting me to say Batman.
I was, a little bit.
But I'm not. It would...
It's an honorable mention.
Yeah, it's an honorable mention. But I have to go with Aquaman.
Aquaman is your favorite comic right now.
I would have to say so.
Wow.
Aquaman, look, for the holidays, I got the Justice League of America written by Grant Morrison run.
Mm-hmm.
I've read some of it. Aquaman is such a boring, awful character with his, you know, this hook hand and his long mullet beard.
Gross.
And it's like, no wonder he was made fun of all the time. And then you take Geoff Johns, and Geoff Johns makes Aquaman one of the most interesting and awesome characters in, I would say, all of comics.
Oh, yeah.
Because the first volume, if you're going to get in trade, is okay. It's okay. It's good. But when you go into issue 7 with the others,
it's astonishing.
It is. Because you have this dynamic with Aquaman, with his past life, learning to deal with his past life, with Mera, Black Manta becomes one of the best villains in all of comics.
Yeah.
And it's all because of what Geoff Johns is doing this is what Geoff Johns did with Green Lantern. He created this whole lore with Green Lantern and expanded universe, and that's what he's doing with Aquaman, and it's just so interesting, and you just want to dive into it. You want to know more about these back history of the others, and then now you have the crossover with Justice League, and now you're going to start now to see his life with Atlantis and what's going on there, and his brother Orm. Who's Ocean Master? Wow. I mean, it's big what's going on right now with that crossover.
Essential.
And so the thing for me is, I was not expecting liking Aquaman. The only reason I got into Aquaman because IGN gave it good reviews, and I have been blown away ever since. There's probably maybe one or two issues I thought okay of, but most of them I've absolutely loved. And Batman, I mean, it's expected that's going to be good, you know? So that's why I love it, I enjoy it, but Aquaman, just with the whole, every issue, finding out more about Arthur and who he is, and seeing his world grow as you're reading the series, has been such a pleasure to read. And so, I'm going to say Aquaman, the new 52.
I totally respect that. I'm not a huge Geoff Johns fan, but I do like how he can take a character who's kind of dorky and make him pretty awesome.
Geoff Johns doesn't do good with Superman, and he does okay with Justice League, but Aquaman and Green Lantern by themselves have been totally worth it.
Yeah.
I've loved what he's done with those two characters.
Cool. Mine is unsurprising to anyone who's listened to our show. Can you guess what it is?
I'm going
to
guess Prophet.
Big Two. These are the Big Two series, not the indies.
Captain Marvel?
Captain Marvel. Yeah. Captain Marvel.
Independent, when we do that, I'm going to guess profit.
You'll be wrong.
What?
You know what my best indie series is? I did a... spoiler alert, I did an essay about it 2 weeks ago in our comic book podcast. What did I talk about for 10 minutes in our last episode?
I haven't listened to our episode yet because I haven't had time.
Amateur move.
Oh, Saga.
Amateur
saga,
move.
Saga, Saga.
Spoiler alert, I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But right now I'm going to talk about Captain Marvel.
Okay.
Captain Marvel. Here's why. Kelly Sue DeConnick has found a consistent tone and voice for Carol Danvers,
mm-hmm.
which has been hard to find over the course of her history. It's a run that doesn't ignore all the history that she has, but builds off of it, especially when you see her interactions with Monica Rambeau or the journalist guy whose name, the photographer whose name I can't remember now. But I love that there's this consistency to it, and this is clearly Carol Danvers' voice, and it feels authentically like her voice. Number two, that costume redesign
is amazing.
If you, like, I know a lot of people are like, well, costumes on women in comic books have to be skimpy for them to be awesome. False.
Really?
False.
Batgirl, Barbara Gordon?
Batwoman.
Yeah, Batwoman.
And the biggest one, Captain Marvel. Go from one of the skimpier outfits in the Marvel Universe
to makes, this is the thing I struggle with. Women or females' costumes in comic books, like, all the men are out, you know, with armor and battle gear, and the women are wearing
leotards. Yeah, leotards.
Makes no sense to me.
But hers, I mean, it covers her from neck down. Like, the only thing you can see when she doesn't have her hood or mask up is her head.
Uh-huh.
She's wearing gloves, she's wearing big boots, she's wearing a full body outfit, and it looks awesome. And she still looks sexy.
Yep.
Let's be straight. She still looks great.
Her...
And, thirdly, both artists who we've seen so far are just tops.
Yes.
Like Dexter Soy for the first and third arc, and Emma Rios especially
Emma
for
Rios.
That second arc. I am so excited.
I didn't like the first issue when I first read it, but now I love it.
I'm so excited for Pretty Deadly with Kelly Sue DeConnick and Emma Rios on it.
For Image, right?
Yeah, that's
it's
going
Western.
Top of the pull list, baby. But anyway, I just love the art. I love the feel and the tone of the book. And there's a reason why it's one of the three comics that's hanging on my wall right now.
Yeah, that's right. So,
it's awesome.
Brayden and his wife Cassie have three comics hanging on the wall.
Wonder Woman, Batwoman, and Captain Marvel.
Yep.
There may be more to join them soon, but those were the three I knew I needed to hang on the wall.
Yeah.
And the other room I'm hanging up all of Punk Rock Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, really?
All six issues.
Well, we'll talk about
that. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
Best indie series! Best indie series. I guess I'll start on this one.
Because
we already spoiled it.
I remember when I was tweeting our episode.
We already spoiled it.
Saga.
Saga. For all the reasons I talked about last episode. Go listen to it. Done. What's yours?
I feel terrible. I still need to listen to all of our episode. I haven't even listened to my nephew.
You were out of town.
I haven't even listened to my nephew speak.
You were out of town.
That's sad. Yeah, I know I was.
You're forgiven.
I had six tests when I got back.
You can listen to it next week sometime. Anyway, all the reasons I talked about last time. Just go listen to the episode.
The Festivus episode, which, by the way, Brayden did an amazing job with the artwork, like with the background on our website, Twitter thing.
Hey, I might play around with this one, too. I'll see how much time I have this week.
Oh, I loved it. So, is it my turn now?
Best indie series, what do you think?
Okay, this is another one where I was struggling.
It would have been Profit if it weren't for Saga.
Yeah, and mine would have been Ghostbusters if it wasn't for Mind Management.
And Mind Management would have been number three for me because, oh my gosh.
Mind Management... I love...
Are you caught up with that one finally?
Yes.
Oh,
I have all the issues. I'm totally caught up
good.
Now. So, because issue zero is the last one that came out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should have another one. I think it's the 23rd.
Yeah. So, this is the thing. I love Christopher Nolan. I love the movie Inception. I feel like mind management is kind of like Inception in a way, in the sense where it's not dreaming, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But just with the whole thing with the mind and this organization and trying to, you're trying to find out who, what's going on and who's behind everything. And I love the artwork. I love the fact that on every single page almost, you have those things on the side, the blue lettering of like the protocols of what to do in the mind management. I love that you don't really know what's going on until issue 6.
Yeah, issue 5, issue 6 is when you finally understand what's going on.
And it was just, and it was a great payoff.
Ow, great payoff. Wasn't it just?
Excuse me. Matt Kent, what he is doing on that issue, in that series, is phenomenal. It's just so different from anything else. Even if you're talking about movies or you know, books.
It's just pushing the boundaries of the format.
Yes.
Which I totally respect.
Yes.
And that's what I love about Saga, too. Saga is pushing the boundaries of what kinds of stories we tell in our comic books.
Yeah. I mean, this is something where it's like in a TV show where it's just every... Like, you have to keep following along. Yeah,
it's so good. You should all be buying it. I think that the first trade is due out pretty soon here. So I'll go buy it.
It's like $10.
It might be.
I think I was looking at it.
Because, you know, maybe these smaller publishers, Dark Horse and Image, they just really want you to buy those freaking collections. They're not going to charge you $30 like DC and Marvel will.
And it's paperback. It's not hardcover.
Yeah, those darn hardcovers. They kill me.
Yep. All right, so now, best miniseries.
Okay, I'll start out since I already spoiled it because I'm going to hang it on my wall. I don't think anyone will be surprised when I say that Punk Rock Jesus was the best miniseries of the year.
That was mine too, Punk Rock Jesus.
So let's talk about why. Because there were runners-up. New Dead Wardians was very, very good.
I thought Ultimate Spider-Man.
Spider-Man would, if I had to pick a best two mini or a best crossover, well, we didn't do a best crossover, but best crossover would have been Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But, oh man.
There hasn't been that many crossovers, like Night of Owls.
There's not that many good crossovers, let's be straight. Yeah. Crossovers usually suck.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But Spider-Man was great. But let's talk about Punk Rock Jesus. Why did you love Punk Rock Jesus so much?
It made me, and let me just preface this, and for you who've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'll know, I'm a religious person, I'm Christian, and the thing with Punk Rock Jesus, I've never read something, well, I won't say never, it's been a really long time I've read something where that has made me question things, but just a beautiful viewpoint to the other side and where they're coming from.
Uh-huh.
And it made you...
Makes you reassess. Not
reassess,
question,
yeah,
but reassess.
Yeah, makes you reassess. It makes you realize, I can totally see why people who aren't religious, people who are agnostic, who are atheist, why they have such a huge problem with religious organizations and religious ideology.
Uh-huh.
Because you can see where people that you either know personally or through media or through books, whatever it may
the
be...
The deleterious effects.
Yes. And it's just very poignant. But also, as well, it still pays tribute and makes the religious side very real and very important. Because
mm-hmm.
you look at Thomas and his experience.
Yep.
And even though his whole terrible circumstances, he still believes and hopes in a God. And that, to me, was very... was just beautiful.
It was beautiful.
And
it was so good.
And just, you question society as a whole and everything. Science... corporate fanaticism in either way, people who have revenge or are bitter, and how it destroys lives.
Yeah.
And
the thing that I loved more than anything about it is that it had this nuanced morality to it. That it wasn't saying that... and which contrasted with the visuals, because the visuals of this comic are what? Stark.
Black and white.
Starkly black and white.
Also very beautifully well drawn.
Oh, Sean Murphy hit it out of the park, and I'm so excited to see his Vertigo series with Snyder.
Yes.
Because him doing the visuals and Snyder doing the writing, sign me up.
Yeah.
But it was so interesting to see that the morality of the story was so shades of gray.
Oh, yeah.
There was no black and white morality to it, while the entire thing is in black and white.
You do not walk away saying, oh, religion's bad, non-religion's good.
Or the opposite.
Yeah, or the opposite. You look and you're like, wow, both sides have a lot of issues.
And it leaves you with more questions than it does answers.
Yes.
When you're all said and done, this is not a happy ending. This is not a tightly constructed ending where you have no questions afterwards. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's not tightly constructed in a narrative sense. I mean, everything was tied up in a way that was satisfying, but it still left me with lots of questions.
Like, who's the angel that saved...
The heck was that? Was it just a delusion? Was it just a dream? Did she really... Who knows?
Well, and then, I mean, it kind of looks like with Thomas that he maybe thought she was Mary.
That she became a Mary to him.
Yeah, she became a Mary to him.
Yeah. And so then you deal with, like, religious iconography and the power of that psychosomatic religious effect, and oh man,
it was just that was amazing. Thing that I loved so much about the series is it
the whole thing was at such a breakneck speed. You could have told it over 12 issues and still made a great book.
Yeah,
but the fact that he condensed it down to 6 issues meant that it was always super super fast. But that's all you needed.
Yep, and I loved walking away knowing that. I feel like, as a reader, that Sean Murphy as a writer looked at both sides of the equation and really dived into what makes both sides tick.
He sure did.
And I felt like I get the feeling, and I could be wrong, I get the feeling he's more towards, maybe not anti-religion, but...
More towards Chris's point of view than he is towards Thomas's point of view.
But he still respected the other side. And I feel like that is so hard to do as a writer... And you don't get a lot of stories where you walk away where they have their obvious, moral of the story, if that makes sense, where you can tell where their viewpoint is. Granted that, you write stories like that to show your viewpoint, but I just feel like he respected both sides. And I learned in my English class in college that if you're going to persuade people of the other side, you need to go where they're coming from.
Yeah, you do.
You need to respect where they're coming from and then show them the other side. And I feel like he successfully did that. He had an argument, he presents it in a way, in this comic book form, that would make the other side, me, being someone who's religious, see exactly where he's coming from and respect where he's coming from.
I thought it was stunning.
Yeah.
I just thought it was stunning.
I was blown away.
That last panel.
This will be, I think, a series that we will talk about for a very...
I think so, too.
Very long time.
I think so, too. I think it's a big... It shows that, even with all the uncertainty of what Vertigo is and where Vertigo's going now, with Karen Berger leaving, mm-hmm. And they're losing Hellblazer. They're losing... Sweet Tooth is done.
American Vampire's
on hiatus for I don't know how long. And so, I know that Vertigo... people are feeling a bit trepidatious about Vertigo and what's going to be coming up from them. But when it's all said and done... They gave us some great stuff this year.
Yeah.
New Dead Wardians was a Vertigo title. Punk Rock Jesus
Sweet
was a Vertigo
Tooth,
title.
Sweet Tooth, I hear, just had the most amazing ending ever.
Yeah, super poignant. I'm going to pick it up in the trades and read it.
Yeah.
But, which I'm excited for, because I really like Lemire.
Yeah.
But still, I'm excited to see where Vertigo goes, especially with the promise of a Snyder, Murphy, or something. It's a miniseries, but they need to get some more ongoings in Vertigo. But if they keep putting out good miniseries like this... then
okay.
Image is still going to feel the squeeze.
Yeah.
Because I expect things of that caliber from Image. I don't expect it from the big two.
No. And that was one of the most poignant things I've read in a very long time.
I totally agree. Okay, next up, let's talk Best Writer. Okay, so who do you pick as your best writer?
Who do you think I'm going to pick this?
My gut says Snyder, because you like Snyder
in
so many things,
Snyder.
But it's not going to be Snyder.
Jeff Lemire, this is why.
That was going to be my second choice.
Jeff Lemire, because, I love what he's doing, what Snyder's doing with Batman, and I think Swamp, I really do like Swamp Thing, but Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, when Lemire was on that, one of the biggest surprises to me of the year. It's not on this list, but I was blown away. I did not think I'd like that. And then you have...
checking on the Lokester. He's
yeah, he's kind of fidgety.
Chewing stuff, and I want to make sure he's chewing things he's allowed to chew.
You have Justice League Dark, what he's doing on that. Blown away. Total fun issue. You have what he's doing, Animal Man. I didn't even really know about Animal Man until Brayden told me about him. And now I'm going to keep Animal Man even after Rot World because I just love what he's doing.
So it is going back on your pull list.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it is.
Oh, good.
And then you have Green Arrow. I'm super excited to see what he does.
I know you're so excited about that one.
I like the TV show. I mean, when it had Huntress, it kind of dipped, but then it got up again. They just introduced Merlin. And
yeah. I've heard good things about it. I haven't like watched it, but I've heard good things about it.
And this is the thing, though. Underwater Welder.
We didn't do a best graphic novel of the year, but that would have been it.
That would have been it.
That totally would have been it for me, too.
Underwater Welder was one of the best stories I've read all year. And just talk about something where, simple premise, right? Some guy goes underwater for his job, about to have a baby, has dad issues. What a interesting, creative, beautiful way of diving into that.
Because, again, that's not the sort of story you expect to have be told in a graphic storytelling setting.
And that's what I feel like Jeff Lemire is doing, because Essex County, same thing. I mean, no, it didn't come out now.
Also amazing, though.
Amazing, though. And so I just... Jeff Lemire, I have to say, actually, and I think Snyder will be okay with this, because it seems like they're, like, best friends. Jeff Lemire, I think, is now my favorite writer. Because of just everything that he does.
Interesting.
I absolutely love everything.
Interesting.
So,
actually, if I had to pick one for 2012, a best graphic novel, I might pick Habibi by Craig Thompson. I think that came out in 2012. I don't remember. I bought it in 2012, so it was me in 2012.
Yeah.
But that would be my pick. But Underwater Welder would
love
be a second.
It. So who's yours?
My best writer pick is a bit of a surprise to me. Because I would have thought it was going to be someone like Kelly Sue DeConnick, or Brian K. Vaughan, or any of these people.
Brian Wood,
because Brian Wood week is my favorite week at the comic book store. Even though I lost two of his books because I added two of his books. It happens, okay?
Yeah.
I'm still buying The Massive. I'm buying Mara. I'm buying Star Wars.
By the way, Star Wars was.
And who knows what that new Marvel Now teaser is going to be?
Yeah, the X and Y or
XX. It's two X's.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I really like Brian Wood, but he's not it.
He's busy.
Brandon Graham.
Oh.
Prophet and Multiple Warheads.
Yeah.
Because both of those books, this is why he gets best writer. Because he pushes the boundaries in ways that nobody else is pushing the boundaries. Because we've talked about a lot of the people who we really like are people who are pushing boundaries. And a lot of them are pushing graphic storytelling in this one direction. Not Brandon Graham. I don't know where the heck he's pushing it, but it's entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, Prophet is, as I've mentioned time and time again, one of the books I look forward to very most every single month. And Multiple Warheads, his miniseries, has been just stellar. And he's been doing the art on it, too. And so it's been like a singular artistic achievement. And it's so... It feels so much like a weird amalgam of 70s European, like, Mobius-style comics, and 2000 AD from Britain in the mid-80s, and still the, like, anime sensibilities, and all of these things, like, percolate together to create these two seminal comic books. It's just astounding. And I've heard that King City and the first Multiple Warheads that he put out before he started Prophet were good, but this is where he's really stepped up his game. I'm very excited to see what this guy continues to do in the future. I know he's on Prophet for the foreseeable future, because it's selling good enough to keep going, unlike my poor, soon-to-be dearly departed Glory.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to see what else he has to offer. Because he says that there should probably be every year there should be 8 to 10 issues of Multiple Warheads.
Really?
It's just going to be a series of miniseries. So there's a miniseries... Yeah. Couple months later, another miniseries starts. A few months later, a new miniseries starts.
So I thought it was just a miniseries. I thought it was going to be done.
It's going to be a series of miniseries.
So kind
of
like Hellboy is now, or Billy the Kid.
Like Hellboy used to be until BPRB actually has numbers now.
Oh, yeah.
Starting in issue 101.
That's right.
But anyway, when it's all said and done, Brandon Graham, I think, is the best writer who is currently pushing boundaries like nobody else in comic books.
There you go. So let's move on to now best artist. We'll
Okay, best artist, or artists, if it's a team.
Yeah.
I'll start, I guess. I cheated on this one. I have a tie.
Okay.
And the first one is Fiona Staples, who is doing the art for Saga all by herself. And by all by herself, I mean that she pencils it, she inks it, she colors it, she letters it by hand. She letters every issue of Saga by hand.
Oh my goodness.
Because at this point, a lot of letterers are really good at doing it digital. But she letters every single page of Saga by hand.
Wow.
And it adds to the feel of the book. It really does. And it feels like the product of one person when you're looking at it. And so the fact that it's just her and Brian Vaughn doing this book all by themselves blows my mind. It's got some of the most colorful, eye-popping art in comic books, some of the best design of characters and creatures, and all that, again, all that stuff I talked about why you should be buying Saga is why she's tied for my best artist of the year. My second is a team of two. It's David Aja and Matt Hollingsworth for Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Those two, and it's only been four issues so far. I've gotten four issues from those guys, and it's enough to convince me, and granted, it's the same team of artist and colorist who did Immortal Iron Fist, which is a game changer. But it's so good. It's so... I mean, you've read those first few issues of Hawkeye.
I've read the first...
Hollingsworth... And Hollingsworth does a brilliant job. Even when he was working with Javier Pulido, Hollingsworth's colors are part of what make that book so great.
Yeah.
Because Fraction has these very dominant color tones that he wants. And that also is what makes me think of Casanova. Because in the Casanova series, each book only had four colors in it. And those four colors were the tones of the book. And that's very much what's happened in Hawkeye. These first six, you kind of are introduced to the new color in issue five, but these first six issues have a dominant color of purple.
Oh,
everything is purple throughout these first six issues. But this next, like, five or six, essentially the next trade paperback worth of issues, are going to be dominated by the color red.
Really?
Which is why the tape, that second issue five, had the blood spattered cover, and that red, and like the cover of issue six was all in red, even though the interiors were all in purple, to show this switch to the red. And like issue seven with the Sandy cover, it's black and white with a big red hurricane. And issue eight is the Cherry Returns issue, and the whole thing is just red.
The girl from issue three.
Yeah.
Right?
She's back. And that's why it's turning red.
Oh, interesting.
And so I have so much, like, a lot of times color is like, whatever. But the way that Hollingsworth does colors is just astounding. And so when he works with David Aja, it's the best stuff that you'll find on any of the big two. The best art of anybody on the big two.
Yeah.
Anyway, who's your best artist?
Okay, so mine, man.
Hard to decide, I know. That's why I cheated on this one. Cheat. Tie.
Okay, this is a tie. Let me explain why. The first one is going to be Greg Capullo, you know, art, and then coloring Jonathan Glapion. I don't know how to say his name, but for Batman.
Yeah.
What they did with the Joker's face and Death of the Family.
Every issue's been great.
Issue five with just that whole... Because that was Greg Capullo's idea to do the...
Was it?
Yeah.
Good job, Greg.
That was his idea to do the turning of the page. And then just how he did... If you talk about even issue one, I know that's 2011, but even then... The designs of all the characters in Arkham Asylum in issue one. You have the Riddler has that mohawk of the question mark. How Clayface looks. How Mr. Pig looks. Or Professor Pig. It's just... I love his details that he does. And even with the talons and how they looked. And the Iron... I'm going to say the Iron Man costume of Batman in issue in the Night of the Owls crossover. You know, that big, huge machine that he had. It just... Awesome designs and the paneling and how you have even the expressions of Batman when he's in the labyrinth and you have the facial hair, but even that one bloodshot eye. That was Greg Capullo.
Yeah.
He just is so creative at making it really, I don't want to use say gritty for gritty's sake, but just capturing so much emotion based on just the drawings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
And so...
I just think it's amazing to see how Capullo's grown.
Yeah.
Because he is a contemporary of Rob Liefeld.
Yeah.
That's when he started drawing comics, is when Liefeld was big.
Did he work on Spawn a little bit?
He did some work for Spawn. And so, when you look at his early stuff, his mid-90s output, you're like, great, we got a Liefeld ripper off of him. He sucks.
Yeah.
But how much has he grown? Especially when they announced that
and
he was on...
the covers he does.
When they announced that Batman. He was going to be on Batman, I was kind
of
like...
A lot of people were. Capullo? Yeah, a lot of people were.
Capullo's like an old hack. Like, get some fresh talent up in there. He's done phenomenal work. I don't want anyone else doing the work.
All the covers that he's done for all the Batmans have been incredible. You have issue 13 of the Joker and, you know, this, like, total garage mechanic get-up with all these TV screens of all the different Bat family. You have issue 12. I mean, issue 11 with the, you know, Batman just dauntingly standing there and posing on the cover. You have, what was it, issue 8 or 9 where it has, like, the Court of Owls mask. I don't know.
It's just great design work.
Yeah, then the coloring. I'm going to butcher his name, but Jonathan Glapion. His coloring just fits Greg Capullo's style so well.
Just
because coloring does make or break.
Coloring makes a huge difference,
and it's just it captures the grittiness and the emotions that Greg Capullo is doing.
Yeah.
So,
because that's been coloring has been one of my biggest complaints. Excuse me, that's the banish the puppy outside alarm. For normally we would put the puppy outside. The coloring is what has killed a lot of the DC books for me.
Green Lantern Corps.
Batgirl.
Yeah.
Batgirl's art has been good, but
yeah,
the coloring has been absolutely atrocious a lot of the time. Because it's just been muddy.
Nightwing.
So whether it's the inking or the color, someone besides the penciler is really screwing these panels up.
Yeah. But my second would have to be close second. What Francis Manapul and Brian Bucciolato are doing on Flash.
Dude, those title pages.
My
I don't read that book,
goodness.
But every month I go online to see what the title page looked like this month because it is so well designed.
That's the thing. It's the paneling that they do. The layouts and the paneling are so creative and so unique and so different from anything that the Big Two is putting out. The writing I really like, but the experience of seeing the artwork and just knowing every month, like, what are they doing next with the layouts?
Yeah.
It's all about the layouts.
Oh, yeah.
In this last issue that came... Oh, that was another one that I picked up. It's from a previous conversation. Brandon was asking me what I picked up, and I kind of forgot. But The Flash was another one.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end of The Flash, of issue 15, he's basically, because he taps into the Speed Force, and the Speed Force will help him kind of see the future a little bit. But he sees the future of what will happen if he does certain events, and it's just him lying down, and his head, if you're looking at it here, the head's right here, and it's just this spray of different future events that could happen. And it was just so beautiful. And the coloring that Brian Bucciolato does is just so unique in the Big Two. And it adds to what Francis does with the artwork. And
cool.
Honestly, and this is the thing. For both those issues, Batman and The Flash, the artwork is an experience. Because Ivan Reis, he does with Aquaman. Now he's doing with Justice League, and he used to be...
He's perfectly serviceable.
He's good. And
his art is fine.
I love his artwork.
You never come back and say, this art sucks.
No. But it's not experience.
It doesn't take your death. It doesn't take your breath away.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I feel like as an artist, he is better than Greg Capullo and Francis Manapul. But for some reason, they just have such a unique style that, both of those books are an experience every single time they're involved, every single time, and I can't help but just figuratively have your jaw drop every time you read an issue with those people involved. It's different than anything else I've ever experienced.
I have to throw a couple more honorable mentions out there, though.
Yeah.
Because as we were talking, these popped into my brain. In terms of one panel layout, one page of panels, that was maybe one of the most arresting panels I've seen in a long time. Props go to Stuart Immonen for All New X-Men, issue 5, when Jean Grey touches Beast's mind and sees what her future would be.
Oh, really?
And there's this two-page layout where she's in the middle and there's all of these scenes...
Events.
...from her future. And I saw online where Stuart Immonen had actually taken that image that he made and in all the little spots, he showed what his reference image was for every single one of them. And so these were little shots from all these 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s comics, and to see how he reinterpreted them so they could be in Genie's mind, shocking.
That's a lot of research.
Oh, man. I just looked at that page for like 5 minutes, and I was like, what's that? What's that one? What's that one? What's that one? What's that one? It was astonishing. It was like reliving Jean Grey's life in its entirety in two pages.
Two pages.
It was awesome. Awesome.
Wow.
And to be fair, I feel like this is sacrilege to have not mentioned this person. I feel like a traitor to myself.
Okay.
J.H. Williams III.
Oh, yeah. Batwoman.
Who's the king of paneling. When you brought up paneling, I was like, no, no, no. As good as Manapool is, J.H. Williams kicks his butt every month.
Yeah, but I love Manapool's paneling.
And that's fine. You can love it more. But J.H. Williams, the way that he does paneling...
This Batwoman crossover.
Oh, this Wonder Woman Batwoman crossover.
Like, remember when they're in... where was it? Where they're in that labyrinth?
And the labyrinth is in the bat symbol?
Yes!
Yeah.
Just so creative.
He's astonishing.
This is the thing
I am like... so sad that we're not going to get him on Batwoman for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's busy drawing the Sandman.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not that sad, because if anyone's going
to
be drawing me more Sandman, by all means, make it J.H. Williams III, the greatest comic book artist who's probably alive right now. I mean, I have everything he ever did with Promethea, and it's game-changing. I have every issue of Batwoman, and it's just... And granted, he didn't do the second arc, but still. He's just... He's a superior artist. He is a superior artist. So, I'm ashamed that I didn't mention him. It's a three-way tie!
Yeah.
Fiona Staples, David Aja, and J.H. Williams III. Three-way tie.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's do Best New Writer. This isn't necessarily a new person to comics, but it's someone that's new to us.
Yeah.
So, Best New Writer to us. This is yours, Darren.
Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Mine too! Surprising no one!
Yeah, I know.
Surprising no one.
I mean, let's talk.
Because she's new to everybody, basically, because she had not done that much other than translation of mangas and that one Norman Osborn issue with Emma Rios.
See, I didn't even know about that. I got introduced to her because of Captain Marvel and then Avenging Spider-Man. Which she did Captain Marvel.
She did great work on Avenging Spider-Man. Captain Marvel is my best big two series.
Avengers Assemble went from like totally lame to oh my gosh, you're capturing the movie in this comic.
Ghost is a flawless recapturing of that property. I'm so excited for the last issue next month.
I feel like this is her breakout year.
It really is.
I really do.
It is. And, you know, and it's good. I mean, to put her, this relative unknown, on a title as big as Avengers Assemble, it's big. It's really big. And I'm just excited to see what she has for us in the future. Like we already mentioned, we're going to see her teaming up with Emma Rios again to do Pretty Deadly, where she's going to continue on Cap Marvel. She's continuing on Avengers Assemble for the foreseeable future. I think that we'll have great things to come from Ms. DeConnick.
Yeah. Holy cow. I love what she's been doing. And she's just so... She follows
genuine.
Us on Twitter.
She's so genuine.
Follows
us on Twitter. I follow her Tumblr, and her Tumblr is one of the best ever.
Yeah.
Because she just is so engaging and excited about talking to fans and really caring about the people who she speaks
with. Yeah, I just think... And that's the thing. That's how I feel about Matt Kent and, like, Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire. Them as people are just great people. And so it's easier to love them. You know, it's not like in a sports athlete where you think of, everyone loves Tiger Woods, everyone loves Kobe Bryant as players.
But they're jerks.
But you look at...
These are genuinely good people in real life.
And it's just like, man...
Gail Simone, Matt Fraction. Yeah. These are good people.
Just like people.
These are people who you want to go have a beer with.
Yeah, you wish that you were lived close to them.
You wish you also lived...
Washington.
Yeah, I wish you wish you also lived in the cabal of comic book writers who live on the same street in frickin' Portland.
Yeah.
Did you know that Bendis like lives next door to Fraction and DeConnick?
I'm guessing from that because I know that they're... I mean, they're
because
close. Because
Henry is over at Bendis' house like for 2 hours every day saying, Brian, what's this? I'm going to tell you this, Brian!
Yeah,
Brian, I'm going to tell you all about this.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, well, and Brian...
And who knows where Brian Bendis has time to talk to anybody, much less raise his own children, much less hang out with Henry all the time.
Yeah, but then, like, I think he was talking about when they... when the Fraction and...
The Fraction DeConnick household.
I always had the Kelly Sue DeConnick, DeConnick household. You know, when they did that whole Godzilla stomping on the buildings thing.
Yeah, just like good
cool.
people. Good people.
Makes you wish that you were a writer or artist yourself, so you could be in that little bubble of awesomeness of good,
seriously.
Awesome people who do
seriously.
Good work. So, anyway, we love you, Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Yeah,
really,
you're great.
Thank you for following us on Twitter.
You're great. You are our favorite new writer for us of 2012.
Yeah,
and that Cap Marvel man. Blows my mind every month.
Really?
I'm so excited for this new arc.
I didn't even care. I remember seeing Captain Marvel and Avengers Assemble. I'm like, I'm never going to choose her. I don't really care for her. Different opinion now. If I were to play that game again, I would be Captain Marvel because she's so freaking cool.
Captain Marvel is the best.
You made a hater of Captain Marvel into a lover.
Yeah, that's because Carol Danvers is my favorite.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Okay, now we're going to talk about... Best moment in comics, worst moment in comics, and the biggest surprise. So let's start. Best moment in comics this year.
Mine's not in the comic book. Mine is comics in general.
Okay, okay.
Mine is the fact that we have now seen a huge surge in awareness, in popularity, and respect for comic books because of Dark Knight Rises and the Avengers.
Yeah,
and even if you're talking about comics in general, the quality that's happened in a little bit, you read 90s comics, even read early 2000 comics. I get the sense that a lot of the new writers coming up, Scott Snyder, Jeff Lemire, Kelly Sue DeConnick, I'd even say, like, Matt Fraction's not new, but I'd put him in this genre, too, of these are people, because you read 90s comics and 80s comics, there definitely is a different quality of writing.
Oh, for sure.
And now you're reading the stuff now, because these people grew up in that era loving comics.
They grew up on that stuff.
Yes.
On people like Neil Gaiman, Warren Ellis, Grant Morrison, all these... Because, like, in the 80s, there was this huge Brit invasion of comics.
Mm-hmm. And Alan Moore.
Yeah, Alan Moore. And it transformed comics forever. Because these writers came over and they pushed comics into new boundaries. And so, and that's what they grew up on. Because it's the same stuff that we read now. And that's what these guys decided, I want to read comics, after they or write comics, after they read that kind of stuff. So that's what they're doing.
But it's a huge influx of quality.
So much.
Then, it was kind of small.
So much
now,
quality.
How many independent... books you want to get now you don't have money for because of the
I get more so Image books than I do DC books, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
I buy twice as many Image books as I do DC.
I feel like, and I wrote this in our blog, but I feel like 2012 is the renaissance of comic books.
I agree. I totally agree. It's just like in the last 5 years, I feel like we've had a renaissance in TV.
Mm-hmm.
This is the renaissance of comic books right now.
So, and it's not just the movies, but it's also in the artwork, and I think
but it's because of the movies, because it's brought...
Awareness
to this genre and made people who wouldn't have read comics before read comics.
But now you have the quality of the writing and the artwork to keep these new fans. Where if it happened in the 90s, no.
Too many pouches.
Oh, yeah. And so it's just, this is the renaissance year of comic books. And thank you, writers and artists and the movie people behind the
Twilight
trilogy and the Avengers.
And don't get me wrong, there's still a boatload of crap out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
For every Captain Marvel there is, there's a Cable and X-Force.
Oh, true.
For every Hawkeye, there's a freaking Thunderbolt.
But if we could buy all the comics that we wanted to buy, if money wasn't an issue, how many titles would it be?
Oh, I would buy way more than I do right now.
It would probably be in the 40, maybe 50.
Maybe.
Could you say that back?
Oh, easily.
In the day?
No.
Maybe 10. But if money wasn't an issue...
If money wasn't an issue, I'd buy 50, 60 comics a week.
Exactly. And that's what's incredible. Because you have a lot of crappy titles in Marvel, in Dark Horse, and DC, or whatever.
But there's so much good stuff, too.
Solid titles in every one of those companies.
Easily.
So,
easily.
2012 Renaissance. Anyway, what's yours?
My best moment in comics actually comes from AVX, issue number 6. And it's when... It's when T'Challa... bitch slaps Tony Stark.
That was your best comic moment of the week.
It was. And it's my best comic moment of the year. Like, I sat down to think about it, and I was like, what's the coolest thing that's happened in comics this whole year? It's that panel. It's that panel of T'Challa smacking some sense into Tony Stark. It's just beautiful.
Black Panther is now Brigham's favorite comic book character.
Because of the Avengers TV show?
Yeah. And he watched The Ultimate.
Ultimate Avengers 2?
Yeah, and it takes place in Wakanda with T'Challa.
Yeah, I should take a look at that Essential Black Panther and see if it would be appropriate for a 10-year-old. And if it is, you should buy it and ship it to him. I'll take a look again.
Yeah.
Because I remember, it's an early 70s comic, so it's pretty inoffensive.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny, though, because he was doing something outside, and he just, like, passed out.
Hey, pretty girl.
So, man, I wish I was Black Panther, and I had the stealth of Black Panther and retractable claws for traction. I don't know, it was cute. Anyway, so...
That's all I have to say. I've talked about it before. It was my favorite moment in comics. It was beautiful.
And Black Panther needs his own movie.
Black Panther does need his own movie and his own title.
So racist Hollywood, do it.
Get on it.
They didn't want to do Red Tails because it had a black man cast.
And then it bombed. So
that's not gonna help.
I guess I don't know. I was gonna say prejudice.
Yeah.
Reinstated. I don't know. Anyway, so worst moment in comics. Let's take worst moment in comics.
This is probably not going to be a surprise. Superman dating Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Mine's also something like that, but...
I don't need to explain it. Like, really? Do I need to explain Superman dating Wonder Woman?
Superman
not being with Lois Lane?
Wonder Woman not being with someone who isn't Superman? Frickin' A.
And they had them going on a date in Justice League, and it just felt so wrong.
I saw those panels where he's like, here, wear some glasses, then no one will know it's you, herp-a-derp-derp.
Yeah, that was a Jeff Johns moment.
Jeff.
Let's just be straight here. Once again, Lois Lane humanizes Clark Kent.
And Wonder Woman is awesome and does not need no man to be even more awesome.
Exactly. And that's what I feel like is Wonder Woman's taking a second class seat to Superman right now.
Yeah, for sure.
He's like teaching her the ropes. It's like,
for sure.
That's not Wonder Woman. Go read the Wonder Woman series. That's not Wonder Woman.
And I have to give props to Azzarello for never even touching Superman in the series.
Yep.
And as long as they can keep that relationship out of Wonder Woman, I will keep buying it.
Well,
if that relationship shows up, I'm afraid I'm going to say, screw you, DC, it's down to two titles a month.
Well, did you see in the cover of Superboy, I think Superman's making out with some girl. I don't know who it is. This Hell on Earth crappy crossover.
Stupid.
So Hell I don't know. Crossover. I haven't read it. Maybe I'm misinformed. It's
whatever.
So what's yours?
My worst moment in comics is also Wonder Woman centric.
Whoa.
It's Wonder Woman issue 7. It's where I felt betrayed by Brian Azzarello.
What?
The way that he changed the backstory of the Amazons.
Yeah. Oh, so you're one of those people who really
I hate
struggled.
That. I hate it. I still buy the book every month, and it's still, I think, the second best book DC puts out every month, if not the very best.
Yeah.
But I hate the way that he's changed the Amazon's backstory. To change them from champions of peace and love to rapist murderers.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Why did he do that? I never saw an interview.
He doesn't... Azzarello doesn't do interviews. He's super reclusive.
Yeah.
I don't know. Nobody knows why. Nobody knows why, but it pisses me off.
See, being someone who got introduced... Well, I knew who Wonder Woman was, but reading her series in the New 52...
it doesn't bother you as much.
It doesn't bother me, no.
It doesn't bother you as much.
But if I was a huge fan... Like, if you change the...
Or in the fact that all of the Amazons are dead now?
Yeah. They better come back. I don't think they will.
I just think it's a tragedy that... In the old 52, for lack of a better name for it, we had this entire race of warrior princess badasses, and now they're all horrible rapists who are dead.
Yeah, I hope they come back. I hope there's some way, but I don't think it'll happen.
That's my worst moment in comics history this year.
Man,
and again, I love the book, but man, that issue pissed me off.
Understandable, so. Man, sorry, my throat is really...
It's okay, do you need a drink of water?
Yeah, I need a drink.
Okay, pause! Back.
I took a drink of water, wiped grape juice, my voice is now healthy again.
Yeah, he sounds like he could live.
Was I just coughing?
And we only have one category left. Biggest surprise!
Ooh, I do be you. Ooh, I do surprise. Ooh, I do be you. Ooh, I do surprise. Let's sing out loud and strong. If you don't know what a surprise is, then listen to our song. When something suddenly happens and you can't believe your eyes, it's a surprise.
Yeah, let's do it.
You sure?
Yeah.
I don't think it is what you think it is.
I don't know that it is either. What's
Simon
your name?
Simon Baz is Green Lantern.
Ooh, okay, that's a solid surprise. Because, tell me why.
Well, okay, I love Hal Jordan. And the fact
you are a Hal Jordan fan.
Oh, I am. I am. The fact that they were going to, you know, obviously he's coming back, but when he was going to be Green Lantern, I'm like, really? That is stupid. That is totally stupid. Like, why in the world are you getting rid of Hal Jordan, who is by far the most interesting popular character, and now you have to get rid of him in Justice League too? But no, no, no. Simon Baz has been the best Green Lantern story in the New 52. Or, well, sorry, in 2012. And I'd even say probably since Blackest Night. Because Brightest Day was good. War of the Green Lanterns was good. You know, the whole Sinestro thing and then the whole Indigo Tribe was good. But Simon Baz has added like a new fresh start to the Green Lantern series that really needed to happen.
Cool.
It got a little stale. And now you have, I love the whole dynamic with him being Middle Eastern. You know, and that whole, you're dealing with some of the prejudices that's present in our society and it's addressing those. And then now you have Justice League of America where he's one of the main people in that team that's going to be done by Geoff Johns. So you have a whole other series kind of started, I think, because of Simon Baz.
It's entirely possible.
It was just one of those things where I was not expecting to love him as much, where he better not die and he better not be kicked off. The Earth needs Simon Baz as Green Lantern.
I hope so. I hope so.
I just love him. So, biggest surprise. I was not expecting that.
Mine is a little expected. What do you think it's going to be?
A little expected?
It's kind of what I think most people would pick as the biggest surprise of 2012.
Are you going to talk about Spider-Man?
Amazing Spider-Man 698.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man 698, where you find out that Doc Ock has stolen Peter Parker's body. That has to be, for me, the biggest surprise in comic books. The fact that Dan Slott would have the guts to do it and then pay it off in number 700.
I don't know. I didn't even think about that. That event didn't even cross my mind for whatever reason when I was coming up with my topic.
That, to me, is the biggest surprise
of
2012.
Wow. You know what?
And the fact that it's stuck around. You know, I read Superior Spider-Man this last week, and it was a solid first issue. It wasn't
I
a perfect first issue.
700.
But I thought 700 was great, and I thought that issue one of Superior Spider-Man was really good. I'm really curious to see have you seen the teaser for what's happening to Spider-Man in April?
No.
It just says fired. And it has a picture of
the Avengers
in the back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's going to be, because he has such hubris. He's so full of himself. He's going to get himself kicked off the Avengers.
And they're not going to be expecting it because they're used to Peter Parker.
Exactly.
And not Doc Ock. And,
exactly. They're just not used to this new dynamic of personality, and it's going to be a colossal train wreck.
I would actually put in there also how Dan Slott handled issue 700 in the death of Spider-Man, because I was not going into it with high hopes, and
I felt like it had great emotional punch. Sure, it was a little rushed, maybe, and I was like, you got 54 pages. It shouldn't feel rushed. It still felt a little rushed, that last couple pages where you find out how Doc Ock's going to carry on as Spider-Man.
But the whole part with Peter Parker meeting Uncle Ben and his parents.
It was beautiful.
Gwen, I mean, it was just, I thought it was a beautiful tribute to who Peter Parker is and what he's done in his whole entire life.
Yeah. And besides, after reading Superior Spider-Man, we all know Peter's coming back, guys.
So I applaud Dan Slott for what he's done, but to have the guts, and I don't think he knew he was going to get the backlash that he did.
I think, no, he knew. He said, y'all are going to hate me on December 26th.
Crazy death threats?
Of course he didn't. Of course he didn't. But I don't know. I felt like it was a really solid surprise. I felt like it had good payoff. And I'm really curious. I mean, Superior Spider-Man's one of my few comics still in my pull list.
Yeah.
Because I want to see where Slott goes with it. He hasn't been a super, super consistent writer, but when he's on very good.
Yeah, I thought the last three issues, 98, 99, and 700...
Were solid. Yeah.
Really, really... That's, you know, if I were to... If I even thought about that, that'd be my biggest surprise. I don't know why I didn't even think about that.
It's okay. I thought about it.
Yeah, so...
Anyway, so that's our best of 2012. Do you have any prognostications, any hopes for 2013 before we close this episode out? What do you hope for in comics?
I really hope that DC kind of gets their act together on their smaller titles. Because they're doing great on the big ones, but the smaller... Or Marvel, when you have Captain Marvel, you have Hawkeye... those are doing well. Some of the lesser X-Men ones. But for whatever reason, DC, they can't seem to find a good, solid... writing or art team.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, yeah. Nightwing was, I thought, was good writing, but the artwork was always inconsistent. Batgirl has inconsistent artwork.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of, I want them to see kind of do it. Put Matt Kent on one of the main titles. Like, don't kick him off Frankenstein and not have... He's doing a background story on Martian Manhunter in JLA. But put Matt Kent on I don't know, like...
Anything.
Anything.
The guy's talented. He put him on anything that you're not...
Yeah.
That's underperforming. And see if he can't make it better.
I just feel like Red Lanterns, New Guardians, those have a lot of potential. Teen Titans has a lot of potential. And Superman, that is a horrible title right now. DC, you need to get your act together.
It's all
Abdel's
fault.
What?
It's all Abdel's fault.
It really is. So I have high hopes that DC will do well. And then Man of Steel and Thor 2 and Iron Man 3. High hopes for those.
With good reason.
Yeah.
My big hopes for 2013 are more awesome Image books.
Because
mm-hmm. Image went from the place that publishes Spawn... to one of the premier comic book companies.
When did this happen?
About 2011. It's been in the last couple years.
I didn't know that people didn't like working at Image.
Well, it's not that they didn't like working there. It's just that there weren't that many things. They didn't have that many properties. But in the last 2 years, they have just, like, opened the reins, and so much has come out, and it's been of such high quality. Like, almost consistently high quality.
Because
they
tell the writers, do whatever you want.
Yeah. And I think that works for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like it's like the HBO of comic book companies.
Yep.
They're like, here is money, make something, bring it back to us, and we hope that it makes money for us.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't, so it gets canceled glory. Sometimes it does, and that's when you get Saga going back to its like sixth printing of the first issue.
Crazy.
Every single issue is printed at least twice.
It's crazy.
It's a good time to be a comic book reader.
Is Walking Dead Image or IDW?
It's Image.
It's Image, yeah.
It's an Image book. Best-selling comic of 2012,
yeah,
not from
then,
the big two.
No, and then all if you look at the graphic novel, top 10 every month, I think Walking Dead, volumes 1, 2, and 3 are always in there.
I know. It's a good comic series. It's not the best, but I'm glad that Kirkman is getting the money for it.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that Image is getting the money for it so that they can take some risks on some of these other properties.
Well, exactly. Well, and then with the TV shows, I mean, you're starting to see there's a you know, people want to take chance with comic book properties to make good TV shows.
Yep.
I mean, Arrow's doing really well for WB, so...
Yeah, I'm hopeful for the future.
And then Young Justice, oh my gosh, this is totally random, but Young Justice, Green Lantern finally came back. DC Nation, amazing shows. Amazing. There's a hope I have for 2013. Don't screw Young Justice and Green Lantern, okay?
Seriously.
Don't mess that up. Those are some of the best shows I've ever seen. Like, I put them up there with Batman the Animated Series and Justice League Unlimited.
Wow.
I just love them.
Wow.
So don't screw that up, Warner Brothers. Do not screw that up. Anyway.
I hope the Adventure Time comic is still as entertaining as it has been the last two issues.
Yeah, we both kind of discovered the Adventure Time TV show.
It's pretty good. Anyway.
I've only seen one episode, but it was hilarious.
Come on, grab a friend.
There's Cassie singing the theme song. I think that we're going to, once Darren leaves, he's got some stuff he needs to do tonight.
I do.
I think we're going to cuddle up and watch some Adventure Time. Anyway, I think that's it. That's the best of 2012, kids. There were a lot of delicious comics and a lot of really crappy comics that came out this year, but...
It was a great year.
All in all, it was a solid year to be a comics fan. So hopefully 2013 can be even better.
Until next time, dear listeners, happy reading.